The Gold Bug. What ho, this fellow is dancing mad. He hath been bitten by the tarantula. All in the Wrong. Many years ago, I contracted an intimacy with a Mr. William Legrand. He was of an ancient Huguenot family and had once been wealthy, but a series of misfortunes had reduced him to want. To avoid the mortification consequent upon his disasters, he left New Orleans, the city of his forefathers, and took up his residence at Sullivan's Island near Charleston, South Carolina. This island is a very singular one. It consists of little else than the sea sand and is about 3 miles long. Its breadth at no point exceeds a quarter of a mile. It is separated from the mainland by a scarcely perceptible creek, oozing its way through a wilderness of reeds and slime, a favorite resort of the marsh hen. The vegetation, as might be supposed, is scant, or at least dwarfish. No trees of any magnitude are to be seen. Near the western extremity, where Fort Moultrie stands, and where are some miserable frame buildings, tenanted, during summer, by the fugitives from Charleston dust and fever, may be found indeed the bristly palmetto. But the whole island, with the exception of this western point and a line of hard white beach on the seacoast, is covered with a dense undergrowth of the sweet myrtle so much prized by the horticulturists of England. The shrub here often attains the height of 15 or 20 feet and forms an almost impenetrable coppice, burthening the air with its fragrance. In the inmost recesses of this coppice, not far from the eastern or more remote end of the island, Legrand had built himself a small hut, which he occupied when I first, by mere accident, made his acquaintance. This soon ripened into friendship, for there was much in the recluse to excite interest and esteem. I found him well-educated, with unusual powers of mind, but infected with misanthropy, and subject to perverse moods of alternate enthusiasm and melancholy. He had with him many books, but rarely employed them. His chief amusements were gunning and fishing, or sauntering along the beach and through the myrtles in quest of shells or entomological specimens. His collection of the latter might have been envied by a Swammerdam. In these excursions, he was usually accompanied by an old negro called Jupiter, who had been manumitted before the reverses of the family, but who could be induced, neither by threats nor by promises, to abandon what he considered his right of attendance upon the footsteps of his young Massa Will. It is not improbable that the relatives of Legrand, conceiving him to be somewhat unsettled in intellect, had contrived to instill this obstinacy into Jupiter with a view to the supervision and guardianship of the wanderer. The winters in the latitude of Sullivan's Island are seldom very severe, and in the fall of the year it is a rare event indeed when a fire is considered necessary. About the middle of October, 18-blank, there occurred, however, a day of remarkable chilliness. Just before sunset, I scrambled my way through the evergreens to the hut of my friend, whom I had not visited for several weeks, my residence being at that time in Charleston, a distance of 9 miles from the island, while the facilities of passage and repassage were very far behind those of the present day. Upon reaching the hut, I rapped, as was my custom, and getting no reply, sought for the key where I knew it was secreted, unlocked the door, and went in. A fine fire was blazing upon the hearth. It was a novelty, and by no means an ungrateful one. I threw off an overcoat, took an armchair by the crackling logs, and awaited patiently the arrival of my hosts. Soon after dark, they arrived, and gave me a most cordial welcome. Jupiter, grinning from ear to ear, bustled about to prepare some marsh hens for supper. Legrand was in one of his fits, how else shall I term them, of enthusiasm. He had found an unknown bivalve, forming a new genus, and more than this, he had hunted down and secured, with Jupiter's assistance, a scarabaeus, which he believed to be totally new, but in respect to which he wished to have my opinion on the morrow. "And why not tonight?" I asked, rubbing my hands over the blaze, and wishing the whole tribe of scarabaei at the devil. Ah, if I had only known you were here, said Legrand, but it's so long since I saw you. And how could I foresee that you would pay me a visit this very night of all others? As I was coming home, I met Lieutenant G from the fort, and very foolishly, I lent him the bug. So it will be impossible for you to see it until the morning. Stay here tonight, and I will send Jupe down for it at sunrise. It is the loveliest thing in creation. What, sunrise? Nonsense! No, the bug! It is of a brilliant gold color, about the size of a large hickory nut, with two jet-black spots near one extremity of the back and another somewhat longer at the other. The antennae are... Dey ain't no tin in him, Mas'r Will, I keep a-tellin' on you. Here interrupted Jupiter. De bug is a ghoul bug, solid, every bit of him inside and all, sep him wing. Never feel half so heavy a bug in my life. Well, suppose it is, Jupe, replied Legrand, somewhat more earnestly, it seemed to me, than the case demanded. Is that any reason for your letting the birds burn? The color, here he turned to me, is really almost enough to warrant Jupiter's idea. You never saw a more brilliant, metallic luster than the scales emit. But of this you cannot judge till tomorrow. In the meantime, I can give you some idea of the shape. Saying this, he seated himself at a small table, on which were a pen and ink, but no paper. He looked for some in a drawer, but found none. Never mind, he said at length, this will answer. And he drew from his waistcoat pocket a scrap of what I took to be a very dirty fool's cap, and made upon it a rough drawing with the pen. While he did this, I retained my seat by the fire, for I was still chilly. When the design was complete, he handed it to me without rising. As I received it, a loud growl was heard, succeeded by a scratching at the door. Jupiter opened it, and a large Newfoundland, belonging to Legrand, rushed in, leaped upon my shoulders, and loaded me with caresses, for I had shown him much attention during previous visits. When his gambols were over, I looked at the paper, and, to speak the truth, found myself not a little puzzled at what my friend had depicted. Well, I said, after contemplating it for some minutes, this is a strange scarabaeus, I must confess, new to me, never saw anything like it before, unless it was a skull or a death's head, which it more nearly resembles than anything else that has come under my observation. A death's head, echoed Legrand. Oh, yes, well, it has something of that appearance upon paper, no doubt. The two upper black spots look like eyes, huh? And the longer one at the bottom like a mouth, and then the shape of the whole is oval. Perhaps so, said I, but Legrand, I fear you are no artist. I must wait until I see the beetle itself, if I am to form any idea of its personal appearance. Well, I don't know, said he, a little nettled. I draw tolerably, should do it at least. I've had good masters, and flatter myself that I am not quite a blockhead. But, my dear fellow, you are joking, then, said I. This is a very passable skull. Indeed, I may say that it is a very excellent skull, according to the vulgar notions about such specimens of physiology, and your scarabaeus must be the queerest scarabaeus in the world if it resembles it. Why, we may get up a very thrilling bit of superstition upon this hint. I presume you will call the bug Scarabaeus caput hominis, or something of that kind. There are many similar titles in the natural histories. But where are the antennae you spoke of? The antennae, said Legrand, who seemed to be getting unaccountably warm upon the subject. I am sure you must see the antennae. I made them as distinct as they are in the original insect, and I presume that is sufficient. Well, I said, perhaps you have. Still, I don't see them. And I handed him the paper without additional remark, not wishing to ruffle his temper, but I was much surprised at the turn affairs had taken. His ill humor puzzled me. And for the drawings of the beetle, there were positively no antennae visible, and the whole did bear a very close resemblance to the ordinary cuts of a death's head. He received the paper very peevishly, and was about to crumple it, apparently to throw it in the fire, when a casual glance at the design seemed suddenly to rivet his attention. In an instant, his face grew violently red. In another, as excessively pale. For some minutes, he continued to scrutinize the drawing minutely where he sat. At length, he arose, took a candle from the table, and proceeded to seat himself upon a sea chest in the farthest corner of the room. Here again he made an anxious examination of the paper, turning it in all directions. He said nothing, however, and his conduct greatly astonished me. Yet I thought it prudent not to exacerbate the growing moodiness of his temper by any comment. Presently he took from his coat pocket a wallet, placed the paper carefully in it, and deposited both in a writing desk, which he locked. He now grew more composed in his demeanor, but his original air of enthusiasm had quite disappeared. Yet he seemed not so much sulky as abstracted. As the evening wore away, he became more and more absorbed in reverie, from which no sallies of mine could arouse him. It had been my intention to pass the night at the hut, as I had frequently done before, but seeing my host in this mood, I deemed it proper to take leave. He did not press me to remain, but as I departed, he shook my hand with even more than his usual cordiality. It was about a month after this, and during the interval I had seen nothing of Legrand, when I received a visit at Charleston from his man Jupiter. I had never seen the good old negro look so dispirited, and I feared that some serious disaster had befallen my friend. "Well, Jupe," said I, "what is the matter now? How is your master?"
"Why, to speak the truth, massa, him not so very well as might be."
"Not well? I am truly sorry to hear it. What does he complain of?"
That's it. He never complain of nothing. But him very sick, for all that."
"Very sick, Jupiter? Why didn't you say so at once? Is he confined to bed?"
"No, dad, he ain't. He ain't fined nowhere. That's just where the shoe pinch. My mind has got to bury heavy about poor Massa Will."
"Jupiter, I should like to understand what it is you are talking about. You say your master is sick. Hasn't he told you what ails him?"
"Why, Massa, it ain't worth while for to get mad about the matter. Massa Will say nothing at all ain't the matter with him. But then, what make him go about looking this here way, with his head down and he soldiers up and as white as a ghost? And then he keep a siphon all the time."
"Keeps a what, Jupiter?"
"Keeps a siphon with the figures on the slate, the queerest figures I ever did see. I's getting to be scared, I tell you. Have for to keep mighty tight eye upon him maneuvers. Till the day he give me the slip for the sun come up and was gone the whole of the blessed day, I had a big stick ready cut for to give him deuced good beating when he did come. But I sich a fool that I hadn't a heart after all. He looked so very poorly."
"Eh? What?"
"Ah, yes, upon the whole, I think you had better not be too severe with the poor fellow. Don't flog him, Jupiter. He can't very well stand it.
But can you form no idea of what has occasioned this illness, or rather this change of conduct? Has anything unpleasant happened since I saw you?"
"No, massa. They ain't been nothing unpleasant since then. 'Twas before then, I'm feared. 'Twas the very day you was there."
"How? What do you mean?"
"Well, massa, I mean the bug. There now."
"The what?"
"De bug. I'm very certain that Mr. Will been bit somewhere about the head with that gold bug."
"And what cause have you, Jupiter, for such a supposition?"
"Claws enough, massa, and mouth, too. I never did see such a deuced bug. He kick and he bite everything what come near him. Massa Will catch him first, but he had for to let him go again mighty quick, I tell you. Then was the time he must have got the bite. I didn't like the look of the bug mouth myself, no how, so I wouldn't take hold of him with my finger. But I caught him with a piece of paper that I found. I wrap him up in the paper and stuff a piece of it in his mouth. That was the way.
And you think, then, that your master was really bitten by the beetle and that the bite made him sick?
I don't think nothing about it. I knows it. What make him dream about the gold so much if 'tain't cause he bit by the gold bug? I's heard about them gold bugs before this.
But how do you know he dreams about gold?
How I know? Why, 'cause he talk about it in his sleep. That's how I knows.
Well, Jupe, perhaps you are right, but to what fortunate circumstance am I to attribute the honor of a visit from you today?
What the matter, massa?
Did you bring any message from Mr. Legrand?
No, massa, I bring this here pistol.
And here Jupiter handed me a note, which ran thus. My dear, why have I not seen you for so long a time? I hope you have not been so foolish as to take offense at any little brusquerie of mine, but no, that is improbable. Since I saw you, I have had great cause for anxiety. I have something to tell you, yet scarcely know how to tell it, or whether I should tell it at all. I have not been quite well for some days past, and poor old Jupe annoys me almost beyond endurance by his well-meant attentions. Would you believe it? He had prepared a huge stick the other day with which to chastise me for giving him the slip, and spending the day solace among the hills on the mainland. I verily believe that my ill looks alone saved me a flogging. I have made no addition to my cabinet since we met. If you can in any way make it convenient, come over with Jupiter. Do come. I wish to see you tonight upon business of importance. I assure you that it is of the highest importance. Ever yours, William Legrand. There was something in the tone of this note which gave me great uneasiness. Its whole style differed materially from that of Legrand. What could he be dreaming of? What new crochet possessed his excitable brain? What business of the highest importance could he possibly have to transact? Jupiter's account of him boded no good. I dreaded lest the continued pressure of misfortune had, at length, fairly unsettled the reason of my friend. Without a moment's hesitation, therefore, I prepared to accompany the negro. Upon reaching the wharf, I noticed a scythe and three spades, all apparently new, lying in the bottom of the boat in which we were to embark. "What is the meaning of all this, Jupe?" I inquired.
"Him scythe, master, and spade."
"Very true, but what are they doing here?"
"Him de scythe and de spade what Massa Will sis pon me buying for him in de town, and de dibble's own lot of money I had to give for him."
"But what in the name of all that is mysterious is your Massa Will going to do with scythes and spades?"
"Dat's more than I know, and dibble take me if I don't believe 'tis more than he know, too. But it's all come of the bug.